The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today on the studio is Joe Bixler with the MSU Extension Office. We've talked with Joe in the past, but today we're talking to a brand new Joe with a brand new position with MSU Extension. Thanks for being with us, Joe.
You're welcome.
First of all, tell us what's happened. You've found a new position, kind of a unique one that hasn't been around in the Thumb for a while.
No, it hasn't been in the Thumb at all, actually. I'm stepping away from my administrative role as the district coordinator, which I assumed back in 2010. So I did that for 7 years, providing the administrative support and leadership for all the staff at all the 5 Thumb offices. And I'm now going back to my educational roots and am going to be working in what we refer to as community food system education, as well as government and public policy work. So I can give more details about both of those and also provide some examples of what that means for Huron-St. Alec and Tuscola County in that upper part of the Thumb.
First of all, though, your former position, that is open but has been temporarily filled while they look for a permanent one?
So there's an interim district coordinator right now, and they'll be posting that position to be filled permanently probably in the next week or two.
And basically that means you're free to start your new position without having to pull a little double duty.
Exactly. Right on point.
Well, nobody wants to have to, you know, go back and do the job they did before while they're starting their new one. You want a clean slate, and you want to go in with, you know, both feet on the ground.
Well, the district coordinator position is administrative, and frankly, if you have administrative responsibilities, it's awful difficult to also assume a program role. So, yeah, a clean break is really the desired way to go. And that's what I've chose to do.
Now, this system, you've taken this job and you've been in it about how long? Close to a month or so?
Actually, since October 16th.
So about a half a month.
About half a month, yes.
Are you settling into it, or is it...
I'm more than settling in, Craig. Frankly, when I spoke to my new boss, who's the institute director on campus, he was happy to accept me as a new member of the work team, frankly, because I can hit the ground running. I've spent the last 7 years of my professional life in you know, here in St. Alec, Tuscola, Lapeer, and St. Clair County, and obviously spent a significant amount of time building relationships and partnerships, and so I'm going to leverage those relationships and partnerships to do my work in community food systems and government and public policy.
Well, give us a little basics. What is community food systems? I mean, it sounds like it would be nice on a card, but what is the practicality of it?
That's a good question, and I'm frankly in the process of really focusing my efforts into three major areas. One is developing capacity for, education systems to incorporate agricultural literacy into their curriculums, in other words, schools. And that can be done a number of different ways, but my expertise is in agriculture to some extent. And so I'll be working with school systems, ISDs, and so forth to create capacity for them to, frankly, do gardening right at the school and incorporate it into their curriculum. I've always been of the mindset for a number of years in my career that you can teach almost anything in a garden. Math, science obviously, reading, the whole nine yards. So I think gardens become a supplemental textbook, if you will, to teaching a whole host of different things, both at the elementary and actually the secondary level as well. So That's one of my areas of focus.
Is that
area of focus will be institutional production or institutional purchasing. We have a lot of small and medium-sized farms in the Thumb who have been trying to access, you know, commercial markets for a long time, and they may not either know how to do that or they don't know how to get connected to the purchasers and vendors. And so I'll be working to teach them on about how to do that and how to make those connections. Those institutions could include not just schools, but also hospitals or many other medical facilities like assisted living centers and so forth. We're not asking folks to consider, you know, replacing their entire menu with all local food, but there are opportunities for those institutions to incorporate local food into their menus, and so I'll be working with producers to see how we can make that happen. And then the third thing that in the community food systems arena that I'm going to be working on is collecting folks who are interested in and across the Thumb to be involved in what I refer to as a food policy council. Now, don't let the word policy scare you, because frankly, all it means is that we want to have folks who are involved in the food system now to provide some expertise and guidance and direction with regards to what our food system looks like here and how we can make connections in a broader way, not only in southeastern Michigan, but across the state, and frankly, even internationally, to move that product.
Okay. Now, when you get to the first one, ag literacy, are you
yeah.
talking generally the entire student population, or is it more of a focus on those who will be pursuing agriculture in the future as a profession?
Well, it's actually threefold, to be honest with you, Craig. We've oftentimes, MSU Extension has been involved in ag literacy for a while, but we've done it in well, I don't want to say a piecemeal kind of way, but we've done it through our Breakfast on the Farm events, where we've invited the public to come and see how their food is produced, either on a dairy farm or a commodity production farm, and that's just one way of doing it. There are other ways of doing it by teaching kids about where their food comes from, and a lot of times it's a lot easier to show them how to grow it, and so they understand where it's actually coming from. I mean, you know. When their mom buys broccoli at the store, it's not coming from Myers, it's actually coming from a farm. The same with dairy. Your cottage cheese, milk, ice cream, and cheese and milk come from, the raw product comes from a dairy farm. And I don't know all the time if people, you know, some folks in the agricultural communities may understand where their food comes from, but by and large, the general public doesn't. And we need to do a better job of making people literate in terms of where their food comes from and how it's produced. So it's much larger, I guess, than just, you know, building a garden at a school and teaching kids how to grow tomatoes and radishes. It's more about here's where my food comes from and here's how I take care of it and here's how we get it to market.
So this would be... This will be a little more comprehensive, a little more long-term than, say, Project Red, which gets the third graders into learning about where food comes from. It's just a day, and it kind of sparks their interest, but your education would probably come, like, after that to reinforce it?
Yeah, it would be more long-term, and frankly, and Project Red does a wonderful job of exposing kids in the community to, you know, what the agricultural industry is all about in a day, but if they want a more long-term experience, certainly having a garden just outside their door at their school would be more helpful. I don't think it's just all about the kids either. We need to get adults involved. It can also expand to, you know, the PTAs and the teachers and, frankly, the food delivery systems in the schools. They could grow some of their own food. I mean, that's the possibilities. Frankly, I'm at the beginning point where I'll have to have some discussions with, you know, the food service folks that are in the schools and so forth. But that's the point in terms of the Food Policy Council as well, to gather those folks who are actually participate in the industry as either producers or buyers or makers of using the product, and where we should go and where we should focus in the greater thumb area of those five counties, and where we should, where I should spend my time. So they're going to be somewhat of an advisory group, too.
I know Ubley has a greenhouse and such. This allows them to grow, you know, while they're still in the classroom type of setting rather than the summer. Is that something you think would be more beneficial rather than a summer program when kids are out and they're going to be on vacation for this week and that week, and you'd have them more on a steady basis?
Well, I'd say all year round. Let me give you another example that's perfect. The FFA chapter in Sandusky in Sanilac County at the ISD actually has, and I'm not remembering the advisor's name right now, but it'll come to me. They actually grow and produce all year round, and they send their food to the Flint Farmers Market. So they're actually making money. And so that begins to incorporate not only how you grow, but why you grow, and you're entering into the commerce of food and selling and hopefully making a profit. So, you know, there's a whole cycle of our food system that, you know, goes from the very beginning to the very end, you know, literally what we refer to as farm to fork. And there are lots of folks that participate in the production of and delivery of food to our tables every day, and there's lots of entry points for kids in terms of looking at careers in agriculture. So we're concerned about the workforce. I'm concerned about the lack of workforce that we have in the agricultural community. You talk to farmers today, they can readily tell you that they're looking for qualified candidates that are going to stay and actually be productive members of their staff. And we're struggling right now. So we have to look at, you know, this food system in a much larger way, in a much more global way, and then find out where our assets are and then plug the holes where we need to plug the holes. And a lot of it comes with education, and that's my job.
Ag literacy, does that also help the kids learn just how diverse agriculture is? It isn't just farming. It isn't just running a plow. There's high-tech stuff out there. There's people using drones to map fields and where they need to add more fertilizer, or where they have problems with pests and such. It's really expanding into a lot of areas that you just don't commonly think of as agriculture.
No, absolutely not. And from the private sector side, there are a number of companies that obviously work with agriculture. One that comes off the top of my head is Dow Agro over in Harbor Beach, which I'd like to talk more about. But also seed companies. I mean, they're hiring agronomists and young folks coming out of college, excuse me, for the first time looking for work. And not only to sell seed, but also to educate farmers on management practices with regards to their fields and so forth. So there's all kinds of entry points with regards to work in the ag industry. It's not always about getting up on a tractor to plow or a combine to harvest. It's there are all kinds of entry points, and our focus right now should be and will be on developing a workforce that can work on the farm, because our farmers need it.
And it also lets you know your options. You know your options because most people today don't, well, you're a prime example, don't stick with just one job. They move on in their careers. They try something new, something fresh. And there's a lot of that in agriculture as well, that you just don't have to lock yourself in.
No, exactly. And that's how, frankly, a lot of our small farms have developed. excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. Lots of folks who have come from other workforce assignments have decided that they want to settle down and start a small farm anywhere from 10 to 50 to 100 acres. and they're producing vegetables, and they want to be able to sell them. They don't always know how to actually produce, and they certainly don't always know how to access the markets. So that's the type of education that we can provide through MSU Extension.
Well, they'd also need to know, you know, if you're just growing one crop, how to do the amenities to your field so you can keep growing that and not exhaust everything that the crop needs, and then you get no yields. You need to learn about maybe cover crops or how to amend the soil.
Exactly. Add more nutrients to the soil. Well, yeah, and quite frankly, when we get into commodity production, that's when we turn over the educational and management efforts to our experts in that area. For example, Bob Battle, who's located at the Huron County office, works in the soybean and corn area with commodity producers up there. So, you know, I am not an expert in terms of that area at all. My expertise more is on the financial and business side and connection side of the food system. So when we need that expertise, we have it and we can provide it. And if we are, if a producer is looking at how to access markets and how to get started with you know, some production that will go to a farmer's market or institutional sales, they'll talk to me.
Well, they'll have to have a business plan to start, to go to the bank to just get started. I mean, there's a lot to starting a business that people don't think of.
And we have folks that'll do that as well. So, you know, if you're listening to this show and you're thinking about, you know, getting into it with a small operation and you want to, you know, start out with that business plan or you want to crunch numbers, I suggest that you contact the MSU Extension office in here in San Alexiscola or St. Clair and Lapeer, and we'll get you connected to our experts that can help you do that.
And you also need experts who can tell you if what you're planning is feasible for the area you're in, the climate that you have on this side of the state, the soil. All of these things are necessary for certain crops. You can't come in and say, oh, I'd like to grow oranges. It won't work.
Right, exactly. Well, here's another example. And I've seen this happen over the last 7 years when I was in my previous role. We've had some folks that have developed vineyards. And we have some soils on the east side of the state that are suitable for vineyards. But if you're brand new at it and you just bought 50 acres and or 10 acres or whatever, and you're thinking about doing that, you need to start at the beginning in terms of what the business plan would be. And then we'd have to connect you with our vintner, who has some expertise relative to the soil amendments and so on and so forth, and the climates, that can give you expertise from that point of view. So, you know, we have a nice portfolio for folks that are considering entering into the food system and agriculture in a small way or medium-sized way. We also have expertise with those folks who are already doing commodity production. So, you know, we've been in this business for over 100 years, and we think we got a pretty good handle on it, but I'm looking forward to trying to make those connections, not trying, but making those connections between the small and medium-sized producers and the other side of the food system, which is the consumer end.
People going into, say, some sort of business like this, they need to realize how far they want to take it, whether they want to just be a supplier to someone else or if they're going to make an end product. You talked about the vineyards. You know, you could grow the grapes for someone, or you can have your own line of wines. You can grow hops in this area, or you could just, you know, have a microbrewery to use them.
Exactly.
It all depends on how much you want to go into it.
Exactly. Well, and there are value-added opportunities in agriculture, too, beyond producing food. For example, we've had some farms that have dabbled in the agritourism industry, where they've developed, well, at this time of the year, obviously we've had corn mazes, and they also start to sell pumpkins and gourds and that sort of thing. So that's a value-added opportunity for a producer, and obviously a value-added product for the consumers as well. And that's just an example. Orchards have done the same thing. They've advanced beyond just selling apples and peaches and so forth. They also, you know, sell pies and apple butter and all that kind of stuff. So they've taken some of their raw product and turned them into finished product and add that to the rest of their mix product wise.
Well, this time of year we think of cider presses.
Oh yeah, cider. Yeah, I gotta have cider.
That's but then you're creating your own brand, you're creating your own identity, and sometimes people need help with that.
Exactly, and that's why we have a product center on campus. We actually have experts, counselors, if you will, who actually sit down with folks and take them from beginning, well, from the beginning, not to the end, in terms of asking a lot of questions, reviewing finances, and talking about marketing, label design, the whole nine yards. So we have an expert from the product center who would schedule a time to meet with you, and it's all confidential. So if somebody I run across wants to look at that very opportunity, I would refer them to a product center counselor, and they would meet with them and carry on from there.
And sometimes the size of the business you're trying to create will dictate whether more and more food safety regulations kick in.
Yeah, that's true. I'll give you an example. When I was in Shiawassee County working for MSU Extension, there were a group of three gentlemen, young gentlemen, who came up with a pickle, a dill pickle that they wanted to market. And they did that one night in the garage of one of the three gentlemen drinking beer. And they said, hey, these pickles are good. We could make them. They went from, and this is 5 years ago now, and I frankly haven't had much contact with them since, but they worked with our product center and went from producing and in all aspects of the regulatory pieces in terms of food safety and so forth with our product center, and they went from, you know, selling them locally in party stores and mom-and-pop grocery stores to they were pushing... I want to say in a given year, they were pushing 25,000 cases of pickles. That's not anything to sneeze at. So they went from, you know, a small garage operation to an actual facility. And every step of the way, MSU Extension was there to assist them with the next step in their business phases.
And sometimes people have to learn that what works in a small batch doesn't necessarily work in a big batch, and you need experts who can help you keep the taste and flavor while making it in a large-scale operation.
Yeah, you need to be consistent with product, that's for sure. And, the other thing you need access to are markets. For example, next week we have our Made in Michigan conference over in Lansing. I think it's on Tuesday, November the 7th. I'll be participating in that event, and it's literally an opportunity for the consumer side to get to know vendors who are making Michigan products that they can use in their own businesses. So it's kind of exciting to, actually going to be held at the Lansing Center in downtown Lansing, just down the street from the Capitol. So it's really a great opportunity for folks to meet both sides, both the production side and those businesses who want to buy the product.
Is it helpful to have, like we have in Huron County, we have the incubator where people can kind of on a small scale without having to buy all the equipment, kind of test it out, see how it would work for them?
Absolutely. And that's been a very successful model. I'm not sure how much the incubator, the kitchen incubator, is being used. I need to get up there and talk to them about that, because that'll kind of fall in my bailiwick. But, you know, if there's somebody out there who wants to go beyond the cottage food law and just sell peanut butter and chocolate chip cookies at a farmer's market, and they want to start producing on a larger scale and penetrate the market even more with a consistent product, they can dabble at first and get their recipe down in the incubator kitchen, and then decide whether they want to take the next step or not.
Well, and it also helps them see what equipment works for them and what doesn't, so when they need to buy for themselves, they've got an idea.
Yeah, or they can start their production and you know, maybe keep it at a certain level for a while right out of the incubator until they get big enough and they get kicked out. You know what I'm saying? I mean, at some point, you know, yeah, it's nice to be in the incubator, but it's time for you to, you know, climb out of the nest and go on your own. That's the purpose of the incubator.
Is it also important for people to, for consistency and quality, to look at, you know, the sources of what they're producing? If you're doing, like, strawberry jam, strawberries are best when they're fresh off the plant, but if you're going to make it year-round, you got to figure out how to make that work and be, as you say, consistent.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the points of trying it out in the incubator. And frankly, our product center counselors and our other food experts can provide that, you know, education, so that, you know, they're not making those mistakes prior to actually coming to the market full scale. They can make those mistakes in the incubator first and test everything out and smooth everything out, and then they can go out on their own.
Do people sometimes love the product and find the business side of it isn't really that much fun? You have to have employees that you've got to pay and take the wage deductions and all that. You know, it becomes more paperwork than the initial fun of just making the product.
Oh, sure. Ask those three guys over in Shiawassee County what happened.
They were in a pickle.
They went from doing it themselves and creating the consistency to selling, you know, 25,000 cases a year. They obviously didn't do that as a threesome. They had to get into some management roles and, yeah, pay the bills, pay payroll, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, when you go through those steps, you get to decide for yourself where you want to be, you know, in the business model. You know, there's a lot of folks that have sold their, you know, baked goods under the cottage food law in Michigan, and they're able to sell certain kinds of foods at farmers markets without, you know, going through a lot of regulatory processes. But when you start to develop, you know, a product at a larger scale, there are lots of things that you have to pay attention to with regards to, you know, the health safety codes and so forth in terms of processing. And, you know, if you're not cut out to do that, you get to decide where you want to stop. So if you want to stay cottage food, you just stay cottage food. You're not, you know, you're going to make X amount of dollars, but if you're looking at this as a source of income for your family or two, then, you know, at least you get to try it on before you take the big dive.
Well, and there's other aspects to it. You have to cover yourself legally. You're going to need to incorporate somehow to protect your personal assets from the business, and you're going to need to know how to insure yourself properly in case something happens. You know, you don't go into it wanting to do that, but things happen, and you've got to be prepared.
Well, if you look at all of the businesses, food businesses that have started over the years and started, you know, on a small scale, and it doesn't even have to be food necessarily. Look at the Post-it note, for crying out loud. That was invented by accident. And I think the fellow that created it, I think he just died in the last 3 or 4 years. But he worked for 3M. And he was just monkeying around one day, and they came up with a semi-sticky glue that could put on back of papers, and now Post-it notes are all over the place. If you're lucky enough to find yourself in a position where you create a product like that, certainly you're going to make a lot of money, either for yourself or somebody else. However, my focus obviously is in food, so you can be real deliberate in terms of taking the steps that you need to take to decide if you want it to be a legitimate business or not.
Well, and these businesses, sometimes when they have a good niche market, they get bought up. I think of that famous
yep.
Amos Cookies out in California. He started off with a single shop on one street in town, became famous, and then a big company gobbled him up.
Yep, that's what happens. That's what happens. And usually benefit from that financially, but that happens rarely. Let's be honest.
Yeah, well, that was a lightning in a bottle type of thing.
Exactly. Hey, can we switch subjects?
Okay.
Well, let me talk about three projects that are still related to the Community Food System Project in some way, and then I just want to talk for a minute about my other assignment in government and public policy.
Okay.
Let me talk about three projects that are happening in specifically Huron County that have regional implications that I'll be involved in. We all know that the Detroit Edison plant in Harbor Beach is being decommissioned, and so that property is going to become available at some point to do something with, and, you know, there's possibilities for that right now. I'll be involved in some community discussions and working with community leaders on where they go with that, working in part with Carl Ozentoski, the EDA director, and helping bring some data to the decision-making process and helping people through the process of making a decision about what's going to happen with that property.
That property has a deep...
The second thing that's happening in Harbor Beach is Dow Agra is actually ramping up their employment at the facility in Harbor Beach, big time. When they do that, there are going to be implications, both positive and probably some not positive, with regards to new employees coming into an area that will need housing and food and gasoline and dry cleaning and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to be actually a positive. But it's going to create some demand on infrastructure that may not be there yet. So we're going to be working with the larger community to talk about that. And then the third project that I'm going to be involved in and this is more food-related in my expertise, is the water authority that exists between Port Austin and Bad Axe was built like 15 years ago. And so it's taking water from Lake Huron up near Port Austin and traverses all the way down. Is that 53 still or is that 42?
Yes, it is down 53.
It has a capacity of 18 million gallons of water, and they're only using about a third of it. And so they're looking for large-scale consumers to take advantage of that additional capacity, and I'll be working with the Water Authority and surrounding communities to look at what opportunities might exist to access that water for production. Some of it could be agricultural, but it's there's also other opportunities for folks who may want to use water to produce something like beer. I mean, there's a possibility. You might have Founders or Bell's or somebody who may want to establish a processing facility in that that water line, and we're just going to be looking at those opportunities and see what we can produce for the additional capacity that's available.
Now, some of those previous projects, the Edison plant, they brought in coal for that plant, so there is a port there that can handle some larger ships, which makes it a little unique.
Well, so what you're referring to is a deep sea port. And if you took advantage of that being a deep sea port, you would have boats that would no longer, ships, I should say, that would no longer have to traverse through under the Zewaukee Bridge and come back out. They could just stay right on the lake, offload, upload, and take off again. It's an option.
In a harbor of refuge with a great breakwall around it.
Exactly. So let me get into the government and public policy piece before we end today's show. Is that okay?
Very good.
So the other part of my assignment is working in government and public policy. I come from that area I had a break in my service with MSU Extension for a period of time back in early 2000, and I was a deputy county administrator. And spent some time in obviously finance and budgeting and organizational development. And so I'm going to spend my 40% of my time programmatically working with county commissioners, doing county commissioner training. Ourselves, MSU Extension, and MAC, the Michigan Association of Counties, have provided new county commissioner training for about 25 years. And we have an election coming up next year in 2018, so we'll have a whole new group of county commissioners that need to be trained. And I got to tell you that it's time for us to start looking at our county commissioner training a little differently. So I'm going to be involved in with a work group who will be working on changing that training a bit. My expertise, frankly, falls into not only the training of new commissioners, but also public policy and financial management and fiscal sustainability. What does that mean? What it means to me is looking at long-term how we view our priorities as a county government or another municipality. How do we prioritize how we're going to spend our money in X period of time, whether it's a year, 5 years, or whatever? So I'll be working with local entities to kind of figure out what their priorities are and how far out they want to view not only where their resources are going to come from or how they can expand those resources revenue-wise, but how are they going to spend the money? Where are the priorities and where we should be spending our money? There's obviously some services that they have to provide. They're called mandated services, like, you know, the sheriff and the jail and courts and all that kind of stuff. But beyond that, you know, in terms of what the quality of life a county might provide, our local leaders have to decide where they're going to spend their funds to develop or to expand the quality of life. So I'll be working with local municipalities on looking at that process and educating from a fiscal point of view. And then I guess the third thing would be working with entities from an organizational development point of view in terms of what their vision and mission might be. What does that mean? I'm glad you asked, Craig.
Okay.
Excuse me. So organizations typically, and this has been my experience over the last 25 years, oftentimes from the top end create a vision for the organization, but they fail to sometimes ask those others who are involved in the organization what they think about what the vision should be. And then furthermore, after they create the vision, they also come up with a mission statement. And oftentimes that's followed by, you know, some folks saying, hey, I'm not so sure that I understand the vision, or I don't agree with the vision, or I think the vision should be expanded or shortened or whatever. My role in working with, again, municipalities or private nonprofits is to say, how do we get the organization to move in the same direction in the most positive way possible with the most amount of people? And my expertise kind of lies in looking at the individuals within an organization and how you can take advantage of their assets and their expertise in terms of buying into the vision and mission. Now, that's a lot of gobbledygook, and we can break it down, but I don't know how much time we have left.
Don't have a lot of time, but it seems like that would be an ongoing process, because in municipalities and such, we got elections coming up, people change, new names.
That's right. And so when you look at individuals who are coming in and out of an organization based on election cycles, you really need to look at their expertises and their personalities and see how they best will benefit the organization from a lot of different points of view. But you really need to understand the individual first in order to find out where they fit in the organization.
Okay.
Well, does that make sense?
Yep, and we are getting a little close to the end of our time here. It sounds like you're going to need to, for Christmas, to get a bigger hat rack, because you just have too many hats you're going to have to wear.
Well, I think it's just a matter of focus, Craig. I've gotten to know a lot of people around the thumb in 7 years, and I intend to frankly take advantage of the partnerships that I've created and the relationships that I've developed to leverage some of my work. Working for a large organization like MSU Extension can be daunting if you're not focused. And so even though I'm going to be dabbling in two different work groups, community food systems and government and public policy, It's two areas that I believe in, and there's a lot. There's frankly some crossover. So, you know, at some point, frankly, in my career, when it ends, I believe that we're going to see a logistics or food processing center on the I-69 corridor. And what will happen with that is, well, here's the example I usually use. Right now, a lot of our beans go down to Kentucky to the Bush family, where they make baked beans. Well, my question is, why are we sending them down to Kentucky when we can boil water? And we can add barbecue sauce to the finished cooked beans. So at some point, there's going to be a food processing center or logistics center along the I-69 corridor, and I think that's when you'll see the upper thumb, commonly referred to as here in San Lac and Tuscola County, be married to the counties of LaPierre and St. Clair.
Excellent.
Does that make sense?
Well, if it comes true, it'll make sense.
No, it's going to happen. Hopefully before my career ends.
Very good. I know you're not shy. Keep in touch. If there are things you need to get the word out, let us know. And if you need to talk to the people on this type of a format in the future, give me a call. We'll set things up.
Craig, I appreciate it. And I'll call back when you're not so busy, and I'll put myself on the show after the first of the year.
Sounds like a plan. Have yourself a great holiday.
Hey, you too, Craig. Have a good day.
You too. Our guest today on the program has been Joe Bixler. He's with the MSU Extension Office. He has changed positions recently. Used to be at the regional director in the area. He's now the community food systems person for this area. He remains in the area and looking at different aspects of getting the food chain in this area, either into local production or better utilized. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news. Just keep it right here at WLEW.
Lace up your skates and have some health.